Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to We Made a Beer. My name's Louise.
I'm Lucy.
And this is We Made a Beer, the podcast in which we, two beer novices, find out about beer by brewing it, drinking it, and chatting to the experts about it. In this episode, we want to explore beers that have the luxury of something that ours don't. Time. Lots and lots of time. Not as in the herb, but as in, as Wikipedia defines it, the indefinite continued progress of existence.
Deep. We want to find out what happens when beer ages in a barrel, in a bottle, or both. We want to know where the tradition of slow beer comes from, and which breweries to look out for. We also need some advice on shortcuts to help us get oaky flavours into our beer without pushing our podcasting deadline back by about a year. This week we talk about Belgian speciality beers with top Belgian beer expert, Sophie van Raffelgem.
To have so many flavors in that beer, you have to give it time. It's an extra ingredient. If you take shortcuts, you will taste it.
We also chat to Dougal Sharp, co-founder of Innis & Gunn, a unique brewery brewing fantastic oak-aged beers on a larger scale.
We're all used to drinking beer. We all know what beer tastes like, but there's just something extra that you get when you use oak barrels and you get these incredible additional flavors like vanilla and toffee.
And we opened some fantastic beers that we've been aging especially to share with our brewing mentor, Tash.
It's a bit of a momentous occasion. I've never stored any alcohol before. I've always just been a, just get it down me, you know?
Just a drinker. Yeah.
As always, we're making this podcast alongside the lovely folks at You Brew London, an open brewery where you brew the beer. Last week, we brewed a collaboration Honey Goza with Hannah Rhodes, the founder of Hiver Beers. This might just be our best beer to date. Here's how it turned out.
It was one thing I was worried about, actually, with, you know, all of the competing flavours, because they're all quite interesting. I was a bit worried about whether maybe one would overshadow the other or they wouldn't work together, but they're all dancing together really well. Like, they're just, yeah, they're very cohesive.
That was our first ever collaborative brew, so it's fantastic that it turned out so well. This week, we want to explore old beer. Now, we're not on about that crappy corner shop can that's been sitting in the back of your cupboard for ages. That is probably long since past it, and you really should think about throwing it away now. We mean deliberately aged beer. Beer that's been lovingly looked after for months and months, sometimes even years, until it's developed really unique and complex flavours.
Before we could have a go at brewing our own aged beer, we sat down with Tash to taste some great examples and tried to work out exactly how we can get some of those complex flavours into our beer without waiting months to release this episode.
Hello, Tash. Welcome back.
Hello. Lovely to see you guys yet again.
Seems rude.
No, it's really lovely to see you guys.
Thank you.
And we've got a couple of exciting beers to share with you. So the first one is Siren American Oak Brown, which is an American brown ale spun on oak.
On the back of the label, it says, an English classic gets the stateside treatment. To finish it off in style, we've spun the beer on oak spirals using our Spinbot. And Spinbot has a capital S and a capital B, so I assume it's a thing. And dry hopped with mosaic.
So I guess this is an example of doing an oak-aged beer and not spending 6 to 8 months or however long sort of labouring over it, or putting it in a barrel. How long will this have been in touch with the oak, do you think?
It doesn't say. It says that it's been spun on oak spirals, which I would assume probably hasn't been done for more than a couple of days. We can assume that it's clean oak or new oak. Lots of nice oaky sweetness.
I mean, I guess it doesn't taste quite as oaky as I was expecting, but then that's to be expected given the length of time.
It does have quite a lot of sort of burnt, bittery kind of taste to it, but in like quite a nice way that complements that sort of dark fruitiness and some sweet spices and stuff.
Mm. Nice. Do you see this a lot in like the modern brewing community?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of breweries that have barrel age ranges have to either crowdfund them or gain investment. It is an expensive thing to do to barrel age beers. So I think you do see smaller breweries that don't have that capacity for barrel aging taking what they can do and innovating around it. And they're not producing something that's exactly the same as a barrel-aged beer, but they're producing something that has some of those complex, interesting flavours. So it's definitely not something to be, you know, looked down upon. It's purely a fact of economics, really, for smaller breweries.
So yeah, obviously we're going to have to do something like this method of oak, but for the purposes of tasting, we should definitely taste some longer aged beers. And Beavertown have got this really exciting project, and we were lucky enough to go to the launch of it. It's a collaboration project with Oscar Blues Brewery in America, and it's called the Tempest Project. And they're basically doing this barrel aging range, and they gave us these two beers to take away, and they told us that they're for further bottle aging. We've had them for, I guess, just over a year now, so it's probably a nice time to open them, though obviously they could last longer. So this one is called Deimos
Weizen Doppelbock. It is barrel aged in Oloroso sherry barrels for 8 months.
Now, Lucy's a big sherry fan, so she really enjoyed our night. And I have to say, there was a lot of boozy stuff, including, you know, neat, very strong spirits to taste. So my memory from the night is hazy.
You'll be able to tell us exactly what it tasted like a year ago, so we can compare it to today. Yeah,
it's fucking delicious.
Yeah. Super. So, I mean, I'm quite excited, really. It's a bit of a momentous occasion. I've never stored any alcohol before. I've always just been a just get it down me, you know?
Just a drinker. Just speaking to the back of the label, the Doppelbock is a dark lager. The addition of Weizen means that it's a wheat beer, so it's used a wheat beer yeast. Usually the most commonly barrel-aged beers are very, very dark beers, so stouts and porters. And because this is a Doppelbock, because it is a lager, despite the fact that it's dark and malty, it is still quite light in body, so you're used to getting, you know, like a real punch in the face with a barrel-aged beer with this much going on. But I think the nice thing about it being having that lighter body is all of those other flavours can like dance quite easily on it, so you can taste the alcohol, but in a really nice way. It's kind of sweet and nutty, and the Doppelbock definitely like lends itself to this style of aging, which is brilliant.
Even though we've done loads of tasting sessions recently and we've had a lot of beer that doesn't taste like beer and it's just exceptional, it still sort of takes me back a little bit. I'm like, wow, it's just so big and it's got so much going on there.
Mm. I really like it. It's lovely.
Do you taste the sherry, Lucy, as a sherry connoisseur?
I wasn't smelling it, actually. On the palate, it has shitloads of flavour. It's really, really flavourful on the palate. And yeah, it doesn't taste at all like your average beer. It does taste... It tastes like a very rich sherry. So it's Oloroso is a richer style of sherry than some, and it's quite oxidative, so it's very nutty, it's quite caramelly. I think that really does come through a lot in this. I think sherry barrels seem to give a really, really nice flavour to beer.
Mm. So a good thing to do now is introduce the Phobos. So it's the same base beer, it's just been aged in a different sort of barrel. So this is aged in Madeira barrels. It does smell different, doesn't it?
It does. Like more sweetness off the sherry and more like dryness, more like tannins off the Madeira. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say I enjoy the sherry a lot more than the Madeira. I got a lot more complexity on the sherry.
This has been maybe a little self-indulgent of us. It's been a really nice experience to taste these beers, but we can't do something like this. It's got way too much complexity to it. So in a way, it's kind of sad that we've compared, you know, this Tempest project to the Siren, because, I mean, they're on different levels, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're two different styles of beer, arguably.
But what we want to do is we want to be able to get that sort of oaky flavour into a beer that we can brew a new brew, mm-hmm. in that kind of like, you know, innovative but cheats in inverted commas kind of way. Yeah. So what do you suggest we do for our base beer? Something dark?
I would think so, yeah. I'd say let's go dark and boozy. Perhaps we could go kind of like an imperial stout.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the oak stuff, I know that obviously you really like sherry. Is there anything else you might want to play with in terms of like flavours?
I like the flavours of oak a lot. I would like to experiment with sherry if we can get our hands on something that tastes like sherry.
How do we go about doing that, actually?
So either we can try and get our hands on a sherry barrel, which seems improbable. We can soak oak chips in sherry, or the third option is potentially trying to get some oak chips that have come from a sherry barrel.
We tasted some exceptional beers there. The Siren was a really great example of an oaky beer made with speed, but we have to say, if you can get your hands on a really interesting oak-aged beer that's been aging away in a proper barrel slowly for months and months, it really will blow your mind. To us, aged beer is a relatively new concept, but as we learned at the beginning of this season, people have been doing it for hundreds of years. Andrew Cooper, co-founder of Wild Beer, told us back in episode one of this season that he was hugely influenced by traditional Belgian breweries who make really complex slow beer.
So, whilst Lucy scoured the internet in search of sherry barrel chips, I Skyped Belgian beer sommelier and expert Sophie van Raffelham. Sophie runs a team of beer sommeliers who work with hotels, restaurants and supermarkets all over the world to provide training, beer menus, new beer concepts and so on. She's also just launched a beer magazine in Belgium and is currently organising a huge beer and food festival across Europe, but somehow still managed to find the time to talk to us. I asked Sophie whether she thought being born and growing up in Belgium influenced her love of beer.
Yes, it has, definitely. That's why I fell in love with beer, because here it's not just a drink, it's the whole world. It's the stories, it's the history, it's the culture, it's the experience, it's everything. But truth is, 8 years ago, I didn't drink any beer.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not your typical beer expert who can tell a story about how they've been working with beer for 10, 20 years or how they grew up with beer.
Yeah.
I don't have any stories like that at all. My parents and my family only drank wine. So I got to know beer when I was studying. And yeah, the lagers were okay, but yeah, I was really impressed by the specialty beers and I was hooked. I thought it was such a beautiful drink, such an underestimated drink. I just followed my passion. I just followed what interested me. Like, yeah, I was getting annoyed by prejudices about women in beer. And I said, instead of getting annoyed all the time, I could change it. I could start a positive project about it. And we actually changed the view on women and beer in a lot of breweries. So that's actually the story. But now I think that's my biggest accomplishment. I convinced my parents of enjoying beer.
It's really interesting that you say you weren't sort of like born into this beer culture, because whenever we talk to people, particularly the UK brewers that we talk to, they always say, you know, they were really inspired by Belgian breweries and that you guys basically sort of dominate this brewing culture. In this episode, we're exploring aged beer. So could you talk us through the traditions of aging beer in Belgium?
It's true that a lot of beers in Belgium have a long maturation. And also you have the re-fermentation in the bottle, so that takes time as well. I think it's just a typical thing for Belgians. Like, Belgians are really, really stubborn. And that was beneficial, but it was also our downfall. So beneficial, why? Because of our stubbornness, we still have these old beer styles. We still have the old Geuzes and the Lambics, the way we actually used to make it 100 years ago.
What is a lambic, actually? Just in case any of our listeners don't know, could you describe sort of the process of making them and the flavour as well?
Well, a lambic is actually a wheat beer. So it's made with at least 30% wheat, and there's the wort. It's put into an open cooler, so you really get a spontaneous fermentation. And that means literally the wild yeasts jump in. And there's a feast for them of sugars to eat and to produce alcohol and carbonation. So after that, the wort is put into the oak barrels where the lambic rests. And then it takes several months to really get this fermentation really going. But it's a strong yeast, so it works for several months and several years. So slowly but surely, all the sugars will disappear and you get a sharp, sour, dry beer.
And the lambic is special just to Belgium?
Yes, well, it originated here. And for as far as I know, it hasn't been recreated in the same way as we make lambic here. Many have tried. And you have a lot of beautiful sour ales as well in the world. But for me, they're no match for the Belgian old Geuzes. You get more character, you get more complexity, you get all kinds of sourness. And we really, really are careful of not creating vinegar sour beers. And I think there are too many in the world right now who taste of vinegar. Just to get this balance just right, it's so important. Now, an old Geuze is a blend of lambic of different ages, so it's protected by Europe. only when it meets certain criteria, it can be called an old goose. And the criteria are that there has to be a lambic 1 year old at least, and the other lambic has to be 3 years old. So, and then they blend them together and you get a re-fermentation in the bottle of several months. So it takes a long time to make an old goose. It actually costs more to make than to make a champagne.
Wow.
And it's actually, if you look at the price, it's not reflected in the price in Belgium. Belgians don't realize it's worth enough.
Really?
Yes, it's good for beer lovers. It's not expensive to buy these amazing beers, but they're underpriced.
People talk about Trappist beers and Abbey beers quite a lot. Can you tell me what they are?
Yes, a Trappist beer is an Abbey beer, but not every Abbey beer is a Trappist beer.
Okay, sounds complicated.
Well, the thing is, the criteria to be called a Trappist beer are the beer has to be brewed within the walls of a monastery. So it literally means that, because you have also like a Trappist beer Mont des Cats. And it's brewed in Chimay because the monks don't have the money for their own brewing installation. But they can't have the label because it's not within their walls. Second one is it has to be brewed by monks or supervised by monks. So in the most Trappist breweries, it's not the monks that brew the beer, but they still supervise. At three, all the money has to be invested, all the profits has to be invested in the community of the abbey or in the abbey itself. And if there's some money left, they have to donate it to charity.
Wow.
So it's quite strict as well. And then you have some unwritten rules as well. They have to respect the life dedicated to God. Like the beer can never be more important than that. So everything has to be in line with the serenity of the community. So you'll never see an advertisement of a Trappist beer with a sexy picture. I wouldn't say they have a longer maturation than other Belgian beers. But I must say that all the Belgian Trappist beers for me have a really high level of quality, and they maintain these standards as well. But the thing is, even the big beers like Duvel, it takes 90 days to make a Duvel, and it has a really strong and full body, and it has a high alcohol percentage. Well, alcohol percentage is for Belgians fairly normal, but I know for the rest of the world it's quite high.
Yeah.
But for us, 6 to 8% is fairly normal. But to have that full body, to have that alcohol percentage, but mostly to have so many flavors in that beer, you have to give it time. It's an extra ingredient. If you take shortcuts, you will taste it. And there are some beers in the world who have taken these shortcuts. And you definitely taste those. And the beer lovers and beer community doesn't drink these beers.
Is there a certain amount of time that you can carry on aging it in the bottle, or should you really be drinking it when you buy it?
Well, most beers that are sold to drink immediately, first of all. You can age beers at home, but people often think you can age any beers. That's not true at all. Most beers you have to drink immediately.
What beers would you recommend people age?
The lower the alcohol percentage is, the less long you can keep them. Even dark beers, it depends, but it's between 2 to 5 years. And then you have the old Flemish brown sour ales. You can keep them for 10, 15 years. And they evolve really beautifully. You can even get hints of Madeira, port, and complexity you can't have without aging them. And then the old goozes, you can keep them for 20, even 40 years. When we got married, we bought a lot of goozes as well, specialty goozes. I'm now keeping them 25 years.
Wow,
That's great. And where are you storing these?
Well, I had to keep sure that I wasn't going to touch them. So we have like a second cellar. We keep locked, so I can't easily reach them.
So just me, like an average person, if I want to age a bottle, I can't really just keep it in my kitchen cupboard for 25 years.
No. No, and also you have to have two things. You have the constant temperature and it has to be dark. Beer doesn't tolerate warmth or light very well. That's why we bottle our beers in dark bottles. And that's why if you take a pint and you put it into the sun for a half an hour and you take it back inside, what does it smell like? It smells like cat pee.
Yeah, it's not nice.
No, and that's because of the hops. But you have to keep beer in a dark place with a constant temperature. Ooh. To age it for a long time.
So what's the oldest beer you've ever tried?
40 years old.
40?
Yes, and it was an Old Goose, you know, Brewery Boon, of the Old Goose Boon. And we found a bottle in someone's cellar. He was going to throw it away, but no, please. And we could rescue it. And the cork was almost gone, but the beer was really nice. Really beautifully sour, still elegant.
And what would the difference be there? So from tasting it at 40 years to tasting it when it was first brewed, how much more different would the flavour be because of that age?
Well, it's difficult to say because Old Goose is a bit like wine. Every year is a bit different. Every vintage is a bit different. But in the beginning, you will have even more fruitiness, like green apples and so on, even more fruity aromas. You have a strong carbonation still that lessens over the years. Some of them evolve in a mellow sourness and other ones evolve in a sharp, even more sharp sourness. So that depends.
So just so I've got this right, the sort of old beer styles that you see quite often in Belgium are Old Gozers, Lambics and a Flemish Brown, did you say?
Yes, old Flemish brown ales.
And do a lot of those make their way over to the UK? Like if our listeners wanted to go and try and get this beer, are they quite readily available or is it very specific to where you are?
I think a lot of the Old Gooses are available in most beer shops in the UK. So Old Goose Boon is really a really nice one. And then the Old Goose Three Fontainen, it means three fountains. A beautiful one, beautiful story as well, has been here for a very long time. And then in the old Flemish brown sour ales, there's one really famous one, Rodenbach.
I've heard of that. But
yeah, that's a great one, especially the Grand Cru and the Rodenbach vintage. Normally, it's easily available as well.
Would you say in Belgium that like old beers and aged beers are a bit mainstream? Because I think in the UK, it's very much still like a beer geek thing. You know, not many people know about it. Not many people are drinking it. Is it more mainstream in Belgium?
No. It's still a lot for the beer lovers, beer geeks.
Even with that tradition of like aged lambics and stuff, though.
Oh, yes. The thing is, we almost lost our lambics and gooses. Thing you have to remember about Belgium, although we are quite unique and amazing in culture, a lot of Belgians are like my family was. They drink wine. But the thing is, the Belgians take their beer for granted. So we're so used to a duvel being great in flavor. We're so used to all these beers and the lambics and the old goose. It has taken us so much years to rediscover it. It's only in the last 15 years that Belgians are starting to rediscover it. We work in so many different countries, but the country I have the most work to do is my own. So yes, we with the Brewers Association created a campaign to be proud of our beers. And you would think this is absurd. Why should a Belgian not be proud of his beers? But this was really necessary to show them the whole world loves our beers. Let's start by becoming proud again as well. And instead of sipping the French wine all the time, let's start to crack open the old goose with the meals.
Sophie was a great guest and I really liked talking to her. You can find out more about Belgian beer and Sophie herself by visiting her website, sophiesworld.be. That's Sophie with an F, not with a PH. After the break, we talk to a Scottish brewery who are making oak-aged beer on a big scale, using a very innovative method. We Made a Beer is brought to you by, well, just us, actually. It's produced, presented, and funded by our good selves. This season, though, we're working alongside Honest Brew, our favourite online beer service, to make the beers we talk about in this show more accessible to you. We use Honest Brew to get brewery-fresh craft beer delivered directly to our door, so we've always got some tasty drinks chilling in the fridge. We've partnered with Honest Brew for a limited time to offer you a fantastic mix case. The We Made a Beer case contains 12 great beers that have been either brewed or recommended to us by Season 2's podcast guests, or that have just inspired this series. And if that wasn't enough of a treat, we can get you a whopping £10 off your first order using the coupon code WEMADEABEER. Use it to get the We Made a Beer case, or to just expand your beer tasting horizons. To recap, go to honestbrew.co.uk, spend over £30, and use the code WEMADEABEER at checkout for £10 off. Check out the episode description in your podcast player for the full T's and C's. Happy drinking!
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many moons ago now, at a foodie festival in Edinburgh, I tried some samples of barrel-finished beer from Innocent Gun. These got me really excited. A few years later, Lou had her first sip of their barrel-aged beer in a small-town Wetherspoons pub. The huge bang of Moorish, oaky flavours really made the beer stand out. Innocent Gun is a really unique Scottish brewery. Their core range is full of oak-aged beers, and despite being a relatively young business, they've managed to get their flavoursome beers into the mainstream. For us, this is fantastic, as they've managed to get this great oaky flavour into more people's mouths.
We Skyped Dougal Gunn Sharp, one half of Innocent Gunn, and asked him to talk us through the happy accident that led to the formation of the company.
I started in the beer industry when I was 14, when Dad bought a brewery in Edinburgh, and I was sort of there and on my school holidays, and I sort of worked my way up. And while I was head brewer there, this big spirits company got in touch to say that they wanted to make an ale-finished whiskey. And in order for them to make it, they needed beer, which they wanted to use to flavour the inside of barrels. And so we had a long, hard think about the type of beer that we would try and brew for them. And we settled on a Scotch ale style. So it's traditional Scottish style, but quite high alcohol and lots of lovely malty characteristics. And we sent that in a road tanker to them. They filled it into B1's first fill bourbon barrels. And the beer kind of soaked into the wood and seasoned these barrels with flavour. And so they started buying all this beer from us. And, you know, the beer was supposed to be a sort of byproduct. Once it treated these barrels, it was supposed to be getting poured away. But the workers in the distillery didn't like to see good beer go to waste.
Who does?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, obvious now, you know, at the time.
So were you literally not expecting this at all? Weren't expecting the beer to taste the way it does?
No, I mean, until that point, I mean, we were brewing big hoppy IPAs for the cask ale market in Scotland and the UK. So it wasn't really a style that was on my radar. But we got a barrel sent back of this waste product and this waste beer. And we put it on our taste panel, and everyone on the taste panel gave it 9 out of 9. Mm-hmm. And that had never happened.
Out of 9?
Is that the rule?
Yes.
Interesting. Why not 10?
Only God gets a 10. So I thought, oh, wow, you know, I've got to do something with this. Mm. And to cut a long story short, I went and spoke to the distillery company who were making the whiskey, and I said, I think we can do something with this beer that, you know, it's just a byproduct of your process. And after they tasted it, they agreed with me. So in 2003, we launched Innocent Gun.
So the sole purpose of Innocent Gun was to do this sort of barrel-aged beer?
Well, it was in the early stages. We focused very much on what is our flagship beer, Innocent Gun Original. And we would do annually a limited edition, but it was all barrel-aged in those days. You know, that's just, we discovered this incredible process for making beer in a way that, you know, nobody else was really doing in the UK at that time. And we thought, well, what else could we do? You know, we got wine barrels and sherry barrels. And actually, one of the first and most successful that we ever did, we actually got a hold of a load of old rum barrels. And rum barrels are incredibly rare because they tend to be reused over and over and over again by the rum companies. So they never really tend to get rid of them.
Mm.
But we managed to get a very small batch. It was so successful, so popular. People loved it so much that it ended up becoming part of our core range. And you can still buy it today. I mean, we've changed the way we make it slightly just because rum barrels are very difficult to get. But
yeah.
But it's very much true to the original flavour. The use of barrels and oak has been a theme of Innocent Gun ever since then, because we just found this incredible process to make beers with these amazing flavours. And till you've tried a barrel-aged beer like Innocent Gun, you've just no idea what it tastes like. And I mean, genuinely, they are a massive flavour shock to your palate, because, you know, we're all used to drinking beer. We all know what beer tastes like. You go to a pub and you have pints of lager or IPA or, you know, porters, and they've all got a lovely flavour, but there's just something extra that you get when you use oak barrels. And, you know, they're full of flavours like vanilla and toffee, and the oak tends to mellow the, you know, like a good wine, it rounds the flavour and mellows it, and it just changes it in so many good ways that it's such a wonderful thing to do. And to this day, it is still one of the most satisfying things about what we do as a business, is standing opposite somebody who's never tried a barrel-aged beer before, or an Innocent Gun, and you sample them on it, and you just see they try it, and there's a look of shock on their face, and there's this massive smile suddenly appears, and they start to go, oh my God, that's amazing. And, you know, I just think to be part of that journey for somebody in their sort of taste experience is a real privilege. Mm-hmm. And it's what gets us out of bed, you know.
How important is the actual quality of the flavour of, like, the base beer? Do you want something that's maybe a bit neutral so that it's going to take on more of that oak, or actually do you go and put a really good porter in an oak barrel, for example?
That's a really good question, and it's actually, it's part of the overall secret of this process, is that we kind of need to brew the beer that's going to work with the flavors that you're going to get from the wood. And so in the case of our rum finished beer, we want to have quite a big robust flavor there in the base beer, which is then complemented by, you get, you know, the flavors of the rum itself is big and it's quite bold, and the overall effect works. I think if we were to, you know, if we were to brew something maybe a bit lighter with those rum flavors, I'm just not sure it would work quite as well.
Roughly how long do they stay in the barrel before they're bottled, those the kind of the rum finished one, for example?
Surprisingly little time. When we do barrel aging, it tends to vary between, I would say, 5 to 20 days. It doesn't need a lot of time, because there's only so far the beer can actually penetrate the wood.
Mm.
And the longer you leave it, the greater the risk that the beer will just simply spoil.
Mm.
Oak barrels are very much unlike, you know, what the rest of a brewery is made of. You know, breweries are stainless steel, and they're like operating theatres. They're hygienic and very clean, and barrels are just not like that at all. And so there's always the risk that when you put beer in a barrel, it's going to go off. And we tend to find that the sort of optimum time of flavour extraction tends to sit somewhere between 5 and 20 days.
I was actually reading on the website that you've invented this kind of jazzy tool, and it's called the Oakerator. Apologies if I pronounced that wrong. But yeah, I was just wondering if you could talk us through what that is.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, I mean, the origins of the Oakerator are that I bought the business out of William Grant's, the distilling company that we went into business with originally. And in doing so, we, between us, agreed that there would be a number of oak barrels that they would allow me to fill on an annual basis in the distillery, and that was 15,000. And I thought, well, you know, this is going to last me forever. 15,000 oak barrels, a lot of barrels. And actually, by the end of the first year following the buyout, we were approaching that level. We just had a massive surge in sales. And, you know, we're faced with a very difficult choice. How do we satisfy the demand from all these people who want to drink this style of beer, but we don't have the oak barrels to do it? And so we set about looking at how we could faithfully replicate the flavour using other techniques. And we ended up working with the very famous Brewing University, Heriot Watt, in Edinburgh, to construct a piece of equipment that would allow us to do that. And in essence, instead of our original processes, what we would do is put beer into barrels. In this oakerator process, which we created, we put the barrel into the beer. So we take a bourbon barrel or a rum barrel, and we actually turn it into small pieces. And then we put them in the oakerator and we circulate the beer through it. And in that way, we get the same flavour, but we need fewer barrels.
So the plus point of this is that you can make more beer and that you can offer this out to loads of people. But were there sort of like, I don't know, purists in the early days that kind of, I don't know, do they think of this as cheating, or has it always been seen as quite a positive new way of brewing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some questions asked, but I mean, in the main, people were very positive because this is genuine innovation. You know, we looked at an issue that we had and we found a way to overcome it in a way which delivered an amazing outcome for drinkers, which is that the beer tastes every bit as good. I think anyone that I've ever described the oakerator and the evolution of it and the way that we arrived at the solution, everyone loves it. You know, I think there's genuine excitement that a tiny little company in Scotland has created this way of barrel aging, which is, you know, it's 21st century.
Yeah. So the actual barrels themselves that you sort of break into pieces, are they the same barrels that you would be using normally, or do you kind of season up barrels?
No, they're the same barrels. You know, we feel in a very privileged and lucky position that through, you know, perseverance and time, we've created a range of different production options for the business that means that we can make all these different styles, and we use the oakerator for some beers and we barrel age for others. It really depends on the style that we're trying to create.
Because you have some like limited releases, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, a very good example of that, you know, we got in the barrel store, which is our on-site barrel warehouse. It's just full of oak barrels maturing quietly away. You know, we've got an imperial stout that's been in there for nearly 12 months. It's just amazing, you know, sort of 11%, you know, it's been in bourbon barrels for that time. And then we've got refill barrels full of this wonderful raspberry saison that we're slow maturing. And things change when you do long maturations in oak. What we tend to find for things like Innocent Gun Original, a short maturation time is good, whereas for some of our bigger, fuller flavoured and more limited releases, you tend to find that longer maturations can be of real benefit.
So is the idea that once it's bottled, it is ready to drink, or are there any of your beers that actually develop more in bottle?
It's another sort of weird twist of the barrel aging story, that when we barrel age and then we bottle the beer, for some weird reason, all the oak flavour just disappears for about a month after it's in bottle. So what we actually have to do for anything that's either oakerated or barrel aged is that we have to keep it in the warehouse for at least a month until that oak flavour returns. It just goes away and then comes back. And I've talked to wine experts that say, oh, similar things happen in wine.
Where bottle shock.
Bottle shock, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Do you know, I've never heard that expression before. It's really interesting. Or, you know, I've heard it described as an unfortunate phase where you get a great wine and suddenly it just drops off a cliff for a year and it comes back.
I wondered, because all of your beers are barrel aged and you're using the oakerator, how do you make sure that each batch has that same oaky sort of flavour?
When we were 100% barrel aged, consistency was a real problem because every barrel is different. And you could have barrels that were made by the same cooperage from the same oak tree, manufactured on the same day, that had the same spirit in them, you know, all that stuff. And you'd put them side by side, fill them a beer, and they'd both taste completely different. And so consistency in the early days was always a challenge because we always had to blend different barrels to get the right sort of mix of flavours in the finished product. With the oakerator, we've taken a lot of that risk out because the oak that we're buying is much more consistent. And so we're always sort of striving to get the absolute best flavour outcome for our drinkers, for our fans. So The Ochreator was a big step forward for us in terms of making sure that every bottle of Innocent Gun was as delicious as the last one.
Big thanks to Dougal for chatting to us. Definitely put in a modern twist on aged beer.
At the beginning of this episode, we attempted to brew our own aged beer. We had neither the time nor the expertise to attempt anything as complicated as what the traditional Belgian breweries are doing. However, we could take some influence from the Innocent Gun style and infuse a beer with oak. In the end, we left our Oloroso sherry barrel chips in the beer for just 2 weeks before packaging it, so we weren't totally confident on how much oak or how much sherry flavour we'd get into the final beer. Here's how it turned out.
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, please can you place your level of excitement to try this beer that is brewed with the little sherry oak chips that you so lovingly stalked the internet for?
I'm going to put it at about a 10.
Oh, is that 10 being the highest or 10 being the lowest?
10 out of 17.
Class, right? As always, 10 is the lowest.
Just sniff the microphone instead of the beer. Anyway, let's have a second go at that.
Oh.
Mmm.
Smells good, huh?
Yeah, kind of caramelly, pruney.
Yeah, I get dried fruits, prune, fig and stuff.
There's a lot of banana.
So, is the old dried fruit, fig and stuff and banana coming from the sherry? Is that what you normally taste when you have sherry?
Yeah, and this was like an Oloroso sherry as well, which is made with lots of oxygen, and over time it gives lots of dried fruit flavours and caramelly kind of oxidative flavours as well.
This is our most boozy one, 8.2%. But sometimes when it's really boozy, it's quite sort of like thick and viscous, and it's not like that, is it?
No, it's, yeah, the body is potentially the only thing that's a little bit lacking. I think we've probably, we've drunk it a little bit too cold, which will, so a little bit more warmth would help with that. Yeah, it's not thick and syrupy and viscous, because it is still quite a young beer.
Yeah, I think the alcohol, like, I can taste the booziness, but I like it because it just reminds me of sherry, which is kind of boozy.
Yeah, just want to sip.
We left our chips in for 2 weeks, which obviously isn't the sort of 6 months or however many months that some people tend to do. So I'm quite surprised that this tastes as oaky and sort of sherry infused as it does in a way.
Yeah, well, the reason that we've got that is because we're using chips rather than a barrel, massively increased surface area. The fact that they're sherry oak chips, so you're getting both the sherry and the oak. We got a lot out of that. It was pretty time efficient, really.
Would you be happy to have your name on this and for people to come into U-Brew and to purchase said beer?
Absolutely. I am very excited for people to come into U-Brew and purchase this beer. I think you guys should be very proud of this. It's delicious.
Don't give us the credit. Oh, no.
I think we should be very proud of this.
We just do the ideas, you know. You do all the hard stuff. Down the hatch. Can we cheers with this one? Because it's so delightful.
It's rude that we didn't do it earlier, isn't it?
Delicious. We ended up with a rich and moorish beer, which we're dead chuffed with for our first dabble into oak. If we could take the whole keg home with us, we would. Sadly, we can't, as it's going on the taps at U-Brew Bermondsey this coming weekend. If you manage to taste our sherry oak stout, let us know your thoughts by getting in touch on Twitter or Instagram at We Made a Beer. And if you fancy having a go at brewing your own beer, you can. U-Brew are offering We Made a Beer podcast listeners 20% off brew courses with the code WMAB20.
As in,
we
made
a
beer
20.
Next week is our final episode of this season, and we've got two fantastic guests lined up. We meet Garrett Oliver, brewmaster at Brooklyn Brewery, and Sarah Warman, head of task force at BrewDog.
Before we go, here's another reminder that we've partnered up with honestbrew.co.uk to help you get your hands on some of the beers mentioned in this podcast. Use the code WEMADEABEER, or one word, at checkout to get £10 off your first beer order. If you like this podcast, please do leave us a review and share us with your friends. Reviewing the programme really helps us to move up the charts in your podcast player and makes us visible to more people. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to subscribe.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavour. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Bye.